everybody, for the semifinal edition of the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast from the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas. It's great to have you all in. The semifinals are set. We have St. Mary's taking on Santa Clara in the early game, the 1 and 4. We have Gonzaga taking on USF in the other semifinal, which will be the late start, probably starting closer to, it says 8:30, but probably it's going to be closer to 8:45, 9 o'clock. And a lot has happened over the weekend. We haven't talked really kind of in depth at all about what's happened in this tournament. And I think one of the bottom lines, one of the easiest things to kind of point out, it has been to this point a very chalky tournament. The first game back on Thursday was the 8-9 game, and Pacific just absolutely Pepperdine clobbered Pacific 102-43. That game was 56-9 at the half. We know there were a lot of extenuating circumstances with that game. Leonard Perry had been reassigned, was no longer the head coach at Pacific by that game. Lorenzo Romar, it had been announced that he also would be stepping away from the program and being let go after the season was done. So he did coach in the WCC tournament, and there was definitely like a as I was talking with Rocco Miller just the other day on the podcast, just this sense of, they're going to try to win it for him, and they absolutely won it for him. Maybe the best we've seen Pepperdine play. I've seen Pepperdine play in a long, long time. Javon Porter had 28 and 11. Michael Ajayi had 21 and 17. They shot 60% from the floor. They had a 50-26 rebounding advantage. There were so many things that went well for Pepperdine in that contest. And then we get to Friday, and Pepperdine does advance, and they end up taking on San Diego. And it looked early on that San Diego was in very much control of that contest, but then the offense just vanished in the second half. They did not have a single 2-point field goal in that second half, but still figured out a way to win 57-52. Wayne McKinney was the hero at the very end with a three with about 3 seconds left in that contest. The San Diego team was a team I had kind of picked out as a team that could start to make a run and maybe actually challenge to get to the semifinals. Obviously, that didn't happen, as we'll kind of go over in a little bit. The San Diego team is really young. They're really talented. It's going to be exciting to kind of see if they're able to keep that team together going into next year. And I'm thinking like transfer portal, whatnot. If they can keep a lot of those guys around, the Deuce Turners, the Kevin Patton Juniors, you have a lot of really strong pieces that are going to go into next season for San Diego that could make them more of a challenger toward the top of the league. Then you have the 6-7 matchup, LMU and Portland. In this game, I mean, both these teams have just been absolutely devastated by injuries all season long. And Portland did not play well early. LMU has not played well of late. And Portland did start to play a little bit better over the last couple games or whatnot. And that ended up being kind of a little bit of a difference, even though they're both just absolutely decimated injury-wise. We got a great performance out of Tyler Robertson, 22 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, a very Tyler Robertson lie, just filling up the stat sheet for them. And that takes us to what we saw on Saturday. Portland took on Santa Clara. And in that one, Portland took on USF. Grab the stat sheet and everything else. USF ended up winning that 72-51. This was a kind of a return to what we're used to seeing from that San Diego, from this USF squad. They had a bad week the last week and a half, did not play well against Santa Clara, did not play well against Gonzaga. And this was more of the team we were used to seeing, more of the team that was the third place team in the league and was a perfect 10-0, now 11-0 against those against that 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seeds in the WCC. Four guys in double figures, Malik Thomas, Dwito Newberry. It was great to actually see him kind of be a little bit more involved in the offense again. Jonathan Mobo, 9 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. So he did fill up the stat sheet, but still not all that active on the offensive front, which we know he's going to have to be tonight, or like we're going to have to talk about that a little bit more in depth, because we know that has been something that I've talked about and others have talked about as being maybe one of the deciding factors in what might happen on Monday night. And then for Santa Clara, San Diego, Santa Clara just absolutely torched San Diego in this one, 104-79. Santa Clara was 35-41 from the free throw line. They just marched to the free throw line constantly in this one. They still did have 20 turnovers, which this is a constant problem for the Broncos. They turned the ball over way too often and this is where we get into the challenge of them against better teams and their inconsistencies against better teams, because this 20 turnovers, if they do that tonight against St. Mary's, that is not going to be a recipe for success. But they got 20 points from Johnny O'Neill. You got 24 from Adama Ball. You got some nice performances off the bench. Cameron Tung with 12 points, 4 rebounds last night or on Saturday night. And so the tournament has been very chalky to this point. We are now into the semifinals, and we have the 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds, as we all expected going into Monday's games. And we'll start with the two semifinal games. We'll start with Santa Clara St. Mary's, because that is the first game of the night, 6 p.m. start, 1 seed versus 4 seed. And the two games that between these two squads at this point have started similarly, where St. Mary's has just absolutely just torched them early. St. Mary's in the first matchup, that was the Santa Clara's game just two nights after playing Gonzaga and beating Gonzaga down at the Levy Center. And that was about as flat and as poorly a game we've seen Santa Clara play in a long, long time. St. Mary's did everything right. They shot the ball well. They rebounded well. They took that crowd out of it from the get-go. St. Mary's was clearly the team to beat at that stage. And in the second matchup, it looked early on like it was going to be the same game all over again. St. Mary's jumped out to a 22-point lead in that first half, but Santa Clara crawled its way back into that game. And that was on the shoulders of Adama Ball. That was on the shoulders of Carlos Marshall. Like they started to play well in that second half and even got within a bucket of tying that ball game up late. St. Mary's did end up holding on and winning by 5. But this was also a matchup that got chippy early on, because it was very clear that Santa Clara was embarrassed by their performance the first time around, and we're not going to lay down this time. And we've seen some chippiness from Santa Clara over the course of the season. Their chippiness with USF, their chippiness with St. Mary's. But the Santa Clara team has kind of nothing to lose for them. They're on the outside kind of looking in on that NIT front. This is a team that is very capable of beating anybody in the conference. They're very capable of beating really anybody when they are right, when they take care of the basketball, when they are shooting well and sharing it well, which doesn't always happen. And that's been the challenge for this Bronco team. So looking more specifically into what we're going to see tonight, what we're going to see from these squads, because it feels like we're diving into a space where St. Mary's is still a little on the vulnerable side, because I don't think we've quite seen them at their best yet, or what could maybe it or who they really are without Josh Jefferson on this roster, and also last few games without Harry Wessels. And there was an Instagram post that went out, some photos of Harry Wessels no longer in the sling. He was practicing with the team on Sunday, so there is evidence that he may be available for the WCC tournament. But specifically for the keys to this game, I'm just looking at this, and for Santa Clara, they've got to get started early. They can't let St. Mary's jump out to big leads anymore, because that has been their problem. They're playing from behind, and that's not the way you're going to beat the St. Mary's squad. They're just too good of a team once they have a lead that they just clamp you down, and then they can just almost play the free throw game because they rebound just so well. Get going early. You don't need to jump out to a big lead early, but you have to be in the ball game through the first half. Later into this game, you've got to give St. Mary's a reason to kind of be give him a reason to be nervous, I think, in this contest. Force Mason Forbes and Luke Barrett to beat you. Because what we saw from Gonzaga is maybe a blueprint on what other teams can try to replicate as well, is they stopped guarding Mason Forbes at one point in that game. And that looked like the game plan from the beginning. And if you can try to take away the Aiden Mahaneys, you try to take away Gustavs Marshallonis, you try to take away Mitchell Saxon, which obviously is easier said than done. But if you are able to do that and able to kind of push forward with forcing Forbes, forcing Barrett to be those guys, then you have a better shot at beating the squad. And then, of course, it's rebounding. You've got to be able to rebound the basketball against this team. Santa Clara did do a good job just the other night against San Diego. They were plus 30 in the rebounding column. And they are one of the bigger teams in the country. But the St. Mary's squad, especially on the offensive end, rebounds incredibly well. And you have to be able to keep them off the glass. Keep them off the offensive glass. Clear those defensive rebounds is a critical component to this, to the semifinal game. On the flip side, for St. Mary's, you know, looking at foul trouble and depth is obviously a key, because right now, not knowing necessarily the status of a Harry Wessels, you got to assume that he's unavailable. And if that is the case, that means Mitchell Saxon's foul trouble is going to be more important and more of a critical component, because again, this Santa Clara team is a big squad between Christoph Tilly, between Johnny O'Neill, between Kaffer Rhodes. Like, they have a ton of size, 3 7 footers, like the five guys, 6'10" or bigger, kind of know all of that about their profile. If they get Mitchell Saxon into foul trouble early, it forces St. Mary's to have to play small, because they just don't have another big body. Maybe, I don't know if they're going to go to Andrew McKeever and burn the red shirt because they're just absolutely have to, but that's kind of like a neither here nor there. If they have, we'll see. I don't think they're going to do that, but it does become a critical part for St. Mary's for him to stay out of foul trouble in this one. Second chance points. So it's kind of related to Saxon, where it's, this team has been so reliant on second chance points. They have to continue to be that way now. This team did lose one of its better offensive weapons in Josh Jefferson. So it does put more pressure on the guards. It does put more pressure on the interior presence to be able to clean up those second chances and also take advantage when you have those offensive rebounds. They did not do a great job of that against Gonzaga. They still did have their total offensive rebounding numbers that we're used to seeing, but they just did not come through and actually executing on those second chance opportunities. And then lastly, it's Augustus Marshallonis, and it's not necessarily his ability to run the show. I think he needs to be more aggressive shooting the ball and taking more shots, because this is a team that needs another offensive weapon. Without Josh Jefferson, that's someone who's going to take 8 to 12 shots a game that no longer is there, that no longer is a consistent offensive threat. And I don't think that's Luke Barrett. Clearly has not been Mason Forbes. So they need somebody to fill up those extra shots. And what we saw against Gonzaga is that Aiden Mahaney took more of those shots, but he became a volume shooter. They made it very difficult for him in that one. And obviously, Santa Clara is not Gonzaga on that front, but Augustus Marshallonis needs to be more aggressive on when he takes his shots and where they are, because it feels like he took 6 shots against Gonzaga. He needs to do more. I think that he needs to be one of the guys who steps up. He has turned into the leader of the squad. He's the guy that I think needs to be the one who starts to fill that gap on the offensive end. So this game is going to be fascinating, because St. Mary's, they're still working through these growing pains of the post-Jefferson fix of what does that look like? Because we saw them, they did beat USF without Jefferson, but it was more of a struggle. And they saw Gonzaga, and I think that was a huge component as to why the difference in that game that we saw. because they were able to play 4 on 5. And yeah, you don't have one of the better offensive weapons in the league. That's a rough go for any team. And Santa Clara has now beaten USF. They beat San Diego resoundingly. Maybe they're starting to pick up some steam. Adama Ball looked more like his old self in the game just the other night. And that's something, as he's come off of injury, it's taken him some time to kind of get back into the flow of it. And if we start to see the Adama Ball that we saw earlier in the season, the one that played against Gonzaga, the one that played well against Washington State, the one that played well at St. Mary's, Santa Clara has a chance to win this ball game. They have a chance to win this one. And I know I saw like the spread, I think, has moved all the way up to like 11 and a half or something like that. That seems like a lot. Like Santa Clara is starting to play much better than they have. They're a little healthier than they have been, and that is a huge component for them. 11 and a half seems so large. I think this is going to be a tight one. I think this is going to be close, and it's going to really come down to some of these finer details. That turnover battle, that turnover number I talked about. Santa Clara can't turn it over 20 times. They do that, St. Mary's would run away from them in this one. So I expect a great one in this matchup. Santa Clara is not going to go down without a fight, so expect some chippiness in this one as well. But if I'm going to have to pick, like, I think it's going to be close, but St. Mary's still kind of, I still think they hold on and move on to the final tomorrow night. All right, so the other semifinal, USF and Gonzaga. This has not gone well for, well, the ends have not gone well for USF the last two times. USF did go up to Spokane early on and dropped a game. They lost by 5. They rallied in those last couple minutes to get back into that game. And it was a one possession game at one point. But when you looked at the totality of that game, Gonzaga had a comfortable lead with about 2 minutes left in that contest, with 90 seconds left in that contest. They had a comfortable lead. And it was only this flurry at the very end that kind of got USF back into it. And then when what we saw at the Chase Center between these two, they were more or less even in that first half. USF wasn't playing particularly well. Gonzaga did not play particularly well. And it was a 1 point Gonzaga lead at the hat at the break. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be fine. Like, this is going to be a competitive second half. I was at that game, went out, I grabbed the beer, I came back, and all of a sudden it was a 10-point game. I missed a maybe a minute of gameplay, and already Gonzaga had blown this game out and was starting to really pull away. And then at the very end of that one, USF made a bit of a rally, and yes, like they left their starters in late. Gonzaga had already cleared their bench, and that was part of the reason why it was even as close as it was. I mean, it was still an 18-point loss for USF. It wasn't that close in the second half. That 18-point, it really, they jumped on them so quickly that this was a very familiar Gonzaga run where they go on these incredible just stretches that just takes all the energy, all of your momentum away, and just you're done. You're done at that point. So if you look at this game, I think USF has to do a lot of things really well to even have a shot in this one. So first off, I think they have to get back to being the dominant team on the glass, because that is something that we have not seen. They in this last game, they were +9 in the first game in the rebounding column. They were -9 in the second game. That can't happen. They have to make that more, they have to get that closer to being even, for them to have a shot. You look at what we saw in that second game. Nolan Hickman had 19 points in the second half of that one. You got to slow down the Gonzaga guards. You have to slow him down. You cannot let him get loose. You have to stick to him. Same thing goes for Ryan Nemhard. You have to stick close. You have to stick with him to really have a shot. Because I do not see them being able to slow down Graham Ike. That's the thing. Like, I don't see it. They just don't have the size. They don't have the physicality inside, because it's everyone they try to throw out, whether it be Newberry, whether it be they try to throw out Mobo. Like, there's just no answer for Graham Ike right now. Not at least not on that USF roster. So you have to beat them in other ways. Just, you have to slow down their guards. And on that front, that means you better be lethal from the perimeter. Honestly, I think that they're going to need to be in the 10, 12, 15 three-pointers made range to have a shot, because they have been dominated in the paint, especially once Graham Ike has now kind of figured out his rhythm and everything else. Anton Watson is also getting, like, you have to still remember about him. You take one away, you still got another. And also what we've started to see is other guys start to play well late. Braden Huff has started to play well late. You can't forget about Ben Gregg, who is always one of the key components of this squad. We know, like, the metrics and the numbers of how much different they have looked, how much different they have played offensively since he's entered the starting lineup. And it's been night and day for this team. So USF, it's slow down their guards. I think you're going to have to just blitz them from the three-point line and get back to controlling the rebounding column, because you didn't do that in the first game, and you're going to need to have that in the second contest, or this third contest. And then, of course, let's turn it over and look at Gonzaga, because this team has been playing so well for the last 2 months now. It's really just keep doing what you're doing, and that has been dominate the paint. In that last game against USF, they shot 72% from two-point range. Graham Ike has continued to dominate. I thought he should have been player of the year. We've just seen, like, how good he has been down the stretch. I think it was, what, a total of 49 points or something in that ballpark in that last week of the season at USF, at St. Mary's. He is just playing better and better and better. And you know, I'm not going to discount the fact that there's probably some, I don't know if bitterness is the right word, but definitely some extra motivation. The fact that not only did he not get player of the year, that none of the Zags got any of the individual awards, the big awards from the WCC last week or earlier this week. I think that's just something kind of put in that back pocket of extra motivation. And I also think one of the things is also getting Nolan Hickman involved early on. And it doesn't have to be him scoring points all the time. He did have 22 against USF. 19 of those did come in the second half. But you look at his game against St. Mary's, I think he scored 4 points in that one, but he had 7 assists, and he had one of the better passes we've seen all year long. It wasn't that wraparound pass to Braden Huff as he cut to the basket. So he can get involved in multiple ways. It doesn't have to be him hitting threes or get into the basket. He can impact what Gonzaga does in a multitude of ways. And we're starting to see that more and more. And that's a key for them. When he's active, when he is involved, they look like a different team. They go, again, kind of like talked about, like when that offense turned, it's like they go kind of from one stage and then hit a different level when he is a bigger part of what they're up to. And in this one, I think it's take advantage of Spokane South, because this arena that I've been in this building one way, shape, or form. I think every year I've missed maybe 3 of the tournaments since it's moved to Las Vegas 15 years ago. And this place is as loud as anywhere when Gonzaga gets going. It is a huge advantage for that squad. They'll be able to feed off that energy. If they start to go on a run, as we know they're very capable of doing, this building turns into almost that 6-man. It turns into that extra advantage for Gonzaga as they go deeper and deeper into this tournament. And so I'm picking Gonzaga to win this one. I think that's pretty solid. This is kind of who they are. This is their time of year. This is what they do. And I do think that USF does have a shot. I think that they have to play near perfect, because we also haven't seen them be able to get over that hump against the better teams that they have played. And that challenge for USF. They have not been to the WCC tournament final since 98. They haven't won it since that same year. And they were, obviously, that was the last time before a couple years ago, that was their last tournament appearance. Santa Clara has not been to the WCC title game since 2007. They haven't won it since 93 or 92, I think it is. St. Mary's is looking for its third straight trip to the final. Gonzaga has been in the championship game every year for the past 26 years. This is just what they do. USF has an opportunity to disrupt that and to do something that no one has been able to do in a quarter century, and that is prevent Gonzaga from reaching the WCC championship. That's not my pick. I still think we're going to see Gonzaga St. Mary's in the championship game. I think that's where we're headed toward. But these two teams, USF, Santa Clara, have a shot. They're going to be in it. They're going to be involved. It's going to be exciting to see what goes on tonight here at the Orleans. All right. Be sure to hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Follow me on Twitter, all the social media at Post by Zach. On Twitter, also for the podcast, at UnoffWCCPod. And that'll do it for today. I'll be trying to grab as many people as I possibly can around here. And this is going to be fun. It's exciting. It's Las Vegas. It's a WCC tournament. You can just feel March all around us. And this is going to be fun, though. So we'll have another episode tomorrow before the championship game between two of the top four seeds from the WCC, two of the teams we already know who are going to be dancing, or maybe two of the teams who are looking for their first shot in a while. All right, well, that'll do it. Thanks for listening, and I will catch you all later.